Right, so good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this men's half-hour session. My name is Graham Virgo, and I'm Pro Vice-Chancellor for Education in the University of Cambridge. And in that capacity, I have responsibility for all sorts of aspects of education, but over the last year in particular, I've been particularly concerned with the university's response to sexual harassment and sexual assault. And I will, if there is time, say a little bit more about that later. But I'm delighted to welcome three speakers. First of all, actor Stephen McGann. And then we have Simon Kearse, who's the Cambridge County Council's Domestic Abuse Partnership Manager, and Ilya Cherezov of Cambridge University, and particularly of the Rugby Union Football Club. So I am going to identify for you a question that we are going to be considering in this session. Each of us will provide a brief answer to the question, and then there will be an opportunity for you to participate. You may have questions of us or comments about what we say. But I'm going to ask Stephen to start. But let me just remind you what the question is. From our perspective, what do men need to change in their attitudes and behaviours in order to improve women's experience? Stephen.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. This is a new ground for me and something I hope I will do more than this first one. In answer to the question, I did what I usually do, and I got out a pen and paper and scribbled a few things down straight away. The first thing I thought about was, I think men have to change their attitudes and behaviour in the company of other men. In my personal experience, men do a very strange thing when issues of equality and women are there. Not all men, and I don't mean to generalise to say that we are all the same, we're not. But a strange thing can happen with male group behaviour. Men can sometimes, in the pub or in a public place, police themselves, conform to a very narrow view of what we really ought to be saying about women and women's equality. I have seen this time and again. A good example of this is I am married to a screenwriter, and she's very, very successful. I, without going into any detail, have a good wage. She has a fabulous wage. And it has been, on more than one occasion, a very strange conversation with men in the pub where they'll say, your wife earns a bit more than you do. I'll say, well, yeah. And they'll go, well, don't you think that's a bit... And they'll pull this strange face. They don't say anything because it's not really logical what they're saying, but what they're actually pulling a face for is to say, but you know, it's our sort of unspoken thing that you're supposed to feel, or maybe a bit uncomfortable with this. And it's strange. Sometimes it's very grown men, very clever men, very sensitive men can all become a part of this. There's a hell of a peer group pressure sometimes, and it feels slightly playground and juvenile. And I think men actually have to be more sophisticated in the conversations they have with each other. And I think we have to break out from that thing that's holding us all down, checking each other's behavior to see that, well, this is what a man's supposed to say to other men here, the sort of banter. I think that's one thing. I think the other thing is men who decide to do this and decide to address questions of feminism don't need a medal. We do not need a medal for doing this. This is not finding this equality in society, online or otherwise, doesn't mean that it doesn't translate to some kind of great male virtue to speak out on this, as far as I'm concerned. It is not a game of inequality, where's Wally? Hey, I'm a bloke and I found this great inequality, you know, admire me. Actually, to find any inequality in society, and we found many before, there is a job to do. And the only time these big inequalities have ever been solved is when all of us get together, get the scrub and brush, and just get on with it, you know? And so I do not require a medal to do anything. I don't think I'm doing anything particularly clever. Finally, because we have limited time, beware for men the inertia of privilege. When I've looked at it, it's very easy for men, even good men, and they're not being evil, to just stay quiet in a situation which might hurt others. But it sort of serves our short-term self-interest, and it's very hard to sort of speak up. I've seen this very sharply with reference to how you started when I am also a science communicator. I have a master's degree in a subject called science communication. I've studied the journalism and the connection of science with society. And so I'm involved with the scientific community and in public speaking and in the work I do. I've been very shocked in the last few years about the very negative responses when women scientists have complained about inequalities. Frankly, I've been appalled at some of the responses. And sometimes too many men have not really wanted to say anything or get involved because it's just too easy not to. And that's a sort of a gift of privilege. It's sort of, it will be okay if we put our heads down, we don't say anything. And I think men need to do a bit more. Well, actually, you know, these brilliant scientists are having a horrible time, and I don't think we should sit by and watch this happen. That is all I shall say for now, because I know we need to move on.
Thank you very much. Simon.
To pick up on what Steve has said, I think there is something even more fundamental that needs to happen. Gloria Steinem talks about her light bulb moment. And I think personally and professionally, without that light bulb moment, and I am going to generalize, the vast majority of men either don't know there is a problem, don't care there is a problem, or are too lazy, or too, as Stephen Fry would call it, incurious, to wonder why the problem is there. And that's before we even start looking at interventions or what possibly we could do to address the issue. So to take a step back and uncover those uncomfortable truths about yourself and your father and your brother and your friends is a massive step.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I don't see professionally and personally many men taking those steps. How to facilitate that? I don't know. I've been working in the field for 20 years. I've been leading Cambridge's response for 10. And I don't have the answers. I can't point to one initiative. I can't point to a number of initiatives that would work on a macro level. So in terms of what needs to happen, it's a question of scope and scale. This is a massive pan-global issue. And anything I can put forward today would be Eurocentric, Cambridge-centric. And that's before we start talking about issues of gender and what I'm actually putting into the issue and whether I'm part of the problem rather than the solution. All these kinds of issues I have to face on a daily basis. So I can suggest things from practice. I can suggest initiatives that have worked. I certainly back up what Stephen has said around conversations. But those light bulb moments are difficult to affect. Mine came in 2005. I was being trained as a facilitator in the Freedom Program, which is a group intervention for women who have been abused by men. And it was an epiphany, but I'm not sure whether that is a personal reaction. It certainly wasn't the intention of the trainer to facilitate that light bulb moment. And there's certainly nothing I'm aware of in terms of a response that we could commission or deliver that would have that impact across the board. Most interventions and the DRIVE project, for example, has been in the news lately, perpetrator interventions. The best analogy is flying a couple of European nurses home from Africa and expecting to cure Ebola. It's on that scale. It's any intervention, anything we can talk about today, yes, helps in a small way, and they are to be applauded and to be valued. But in terms of the bigger picture, I struggled with the idea that I may be part of the problem rather than the solution, and that my work and the way I go about my work is actually making things worse, not better.
Okay, thank you. And Ilya.
Yeah, just to pick up and kind of follow up with the point that Steve made about the kind of the inertia of privilege, and I think it's also like the ignorance of privilege. So I'm a rugby player, play sport. I never kind of paused and actually thought about why I'm able to pursue my passion in sport in a certain way, but other people can't. And a big example of that is female sport. And you just, as a man, you blindly go along and you don't even consider it. You don't consider, why is it that we get to play at a stadium in front of 30,000 people and they play in a field wherever they can find it? Why are we supported and they have to raise their own funds to get a kit and a ball to be able to play? And I think what's happening definitely in the last 5 years in the university and also I think nationally and globally, as you see the arguments in terms of prize money in tennis and other sports, is that people are beginning to pause and think and kind of question their perspective as to why is it they get to do something and the female sportsman can't. And if your only reason and argument is, well, it's tradition, it's always happened this way, then you've got to question the line of argument there. So something that's been happening at the rugby club of the university is that last year the men and the women joined up. They became Cambridge University Rugby Club. It wasn't a men's team, wasn't a female team. They became a joint merged club. And what that means is that the females now are able to benefit from the facilities that we've had access to in the same way, the coaching, the physiotherapy, the sponsorship that we've had. And also, we are able to benefit from the fact that women are now participating in the varsity match at Twickenham on the BBC. And this means that the game, the whole match, is now being broadcast to a far bigger audience. And it's increasing the number of people that might be interested in viewing that match. So we are actually benefiting from the merger. So I'm not saying that there's a completely equal playing field now, no pun intended, but the barriers are being broken down by some very, very motivated and kind of hardworking individuals, and the average sportsman is now questioning his own perspectives and finding ways that they can go about and make sure that female athletes are given the platform that they deserve to pursue their sport and also raise the profile of the game, which will only go and benefit people, young kids, who can look up to these people as role models and therefore drive social change.
Thank you very much. And finally, and very briefly from my perspective, and that's a perspective within the University of Cambridge, I am acutely aware of the serious concerns and inequalities based on gender. I'm also aware that there have been some small triumphs along the way. And many of us, I'm sure, will be thinking those changes, those triumphs should have occurred much, much earlier, but they are at least occurring. So an example, important and symbolic as well, is that the women's rugby team did play in the varsity match at Twickenham in December. Last year, the women's boat race took place on the same day as the men's boat race. So in sport, where there has certainly been significant inequality, and as I say, there is a lot more to be done, there are real signs of improvement. One of my other concerns is about the way that men, male students, perceive and react particularly to female students. And in answering the question, what do men need to change in their attitudes and behaviours, is an awful lot. In an earlier session, a session entitled Not Guilty, we did examine various ways of responding to sexual assault, violence and harassment. And there is an initiative that is getting increasingly ahead of steam behind it, which is the Bystander Initiative, which is actually providing training and support to men and women to actually stand up and say that behaviour, that attitude is unacceptable. And I think there's quite clear evidence that there needs to be a cultural change. And at least within the University of Cambridge, we are acknowledging that and trying to ensure that that cultural change takes place. So particularly as regards the issue of harassment, sexual assault and rape. I've been Pro Vice Chancellor for Education since October 2014. And when I took up that position, it was very clear to me that there was a problem and it was difficult to know what the solution was. I examined the university's disciplinary code, and that disciplinary code is very detailed and has all sorts of rules about vandalism in lecture theatres or interrupting a lecture, but said nothing about any harassment, assault, let alone sexual assault, rape, and violence. Cambridge is a university that moves very slowly, but in July of last year, we changed that so that now our disciplinary code does at least acknowledge there is a standard of behaviour that we expect, and that harassment, sexual assault, violence, rape is not acceptable. Now, of course, we shouldn't have had to say that, but that is another small triumph. There are many more things that need to be done, but I think we are showing greater awareness of that. And finally, I will say that actually having a half-hour session today involving men talking about this issue is another small but significant step. Thank you. So I don't know whether any of the other speakers want to respond to what anybody else has said. Stephen, you were first.
I want to pick up on one thing that you said before about light bulb moments with men. I think that really rang true with me. I think too often, probably, it's a great shame that we have to have these epiphanies. But I did have one myself, and it came around this idea of studying old Claude Lévi-Strauss and ideologies and realising one day when we were doing feminist studies and actually studying this, and the penny dropped, the light bulb came on, and I began to see that we live under lots of different ideologies. We live in Western ideologies. We live in various ideas, and they cross and they overlap. And one of them is this ideology that says there is a certain kind of natural law, this old unspoken thing. And once you see it, as a bloke, once you see it and you start to see the evidence of it, and once your slow, dull brain begins to really see it properly, you can't unsee it. And once I saw that we were living in this thing, and the problem is with ideologies, is they do this sneaky trick. They seep into society and become invisible. So they seem then, they take on the guise of the natural order. It's that wonderful phrase, common sense. Now, what I love about that phrase, common sense, is the scientists I've been mixing with. Now, if you say common sense to a scientist, and there may be scientists in here, if you say common sense to a scientist, it's a joke. Common sense is a bad thing. It's weakness. It's cognitive bias. It is the thing they don't want to have when they're doing studies on things, because it means being weak, assuming rather than finding by evidence. But outside of the lab, if you say common sense, it's often cited as a great virtue. Common sense, the great wisdom we all have, it's nonsense. There are lots of these ideologies that cross over. And what we need to just do is unpick them, but it's quite difficult because a lot of them have assumed a kind of invisibility, and this is one of them. But it is hard if you don't, not many people, and I will agree, get this light bulb moment. They don't get it. And you'll see them, and it's too easy for it just to remain, well, it's just the way it's always been done. But then consider this, and I am an optimist, and I do like small progresses. Consider that all of the great social movements in the last few hundred years, slavery, the treatment of children in work, the suffrage of women, all of them once, the people who argued against them all used it citing the natural order of things. There were always people to say that it was absolutely the natural order of things, that we were superior to other races or to other genders. Although all of them were swept away and it got better. So the sky didn't cave in. Yet we don't have that lesson from history. Here we are again under more things. The logic tells you that there will be more things we need to look, step back from and unpick. But it's very, very hard to know how many people, how you're going to stimulate people to have that light bulb moment.
Thank you. I do have one question particularly for you, Simon, which is that from what you said earlier, I'm going to put some words in your mouth, but you seem to be suggesting that men may be the problem to such an extent that they should withdraw and avoid the problem that way. Can men assist with the inequalities that have been identified?
Men can assist, but I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that because we hold the privilege and because we hold the power, that our interventions and our drive can actually be problematic. Again, generalizing massively, but the idea that we can somehow fix these things is a very male way of viewing the world. And certainly if we were to talk about statutory interventions, or the type of interventions that I'm responsible for, there's a question there around the whole ethos of whether statutory interventions actually can ever be a good thing, or whether it's, if you want to get into kind of Marxist discourse, whether it's always going to be problematic, or whether it's just propagating the abuse, perpetrating the abuse. Just to pick on something Steve said as well, and I'll use another analogy from a Cambridge boy. Douglas Adams talks about an SEP. Somebody else's problem in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The SEP is a problem which is so massive that people either choose not to see it or can't see it. Now, I like that analogy because men, generalizing again, can recognize the harm caused by individual incidents. So a woman being raped, a woman being physically abused, emotionally, psychologically abused, I think on an incidental basis, most men can kind of get that, certainly in my experience and my kind of network, if you like. But it's the continuum and it's the life cycle of that violence and abuse that is the most difficult thing to get your head around, because it permeates everything. If we take Liz Kelly's continuum on board and then we look at the life cycle of gender-based violence, that is the big thing. That is the thing that we really struggle with. So the interventions, the drip, drip, drip approach, yep, absolutely get it. That's what I do. That's what I do for a living. And I am optimistic around the success in a very small way. But the big picture stuff, that SEP, that is what I'm talking about when I'm saying light bulb moments are needed. It's that, it's that moment of clarity to pick up on something which is so massive and not pervasive.
Okay, and I have a question for Ilya, which is from what you were saying about rugby in particular, and as I was saying, that there have been significant and positive changes. Is it sufficient to allow women to play at the same sort of level, the same sort of ground as men in the rugby club? Or do men have a greater responsibility as regards what they should be doing as regards equality?
Oh, absolutely. I think just saying, oh, you can go and have your match at Twickenham and they go, stop campaigning, is definitely not enough. There now, what's happening is because of the profile that something like having the match at such a venue gives, is us men as players now considering, oh, let's go actually have a look at a women's rugby game that we never would have done otherwise. Mm. And you go out there and you have a look. A game as well, rugby, associated with being quite a masculine, physical sport. And you go and watch it, and it kind of opens your eyes a bit, being like, oh, they play just as well as us. They hit just as hard as us. And I encourage any of you who get the opportunity to actually go and watch a women's rugby match, because you'll be surprised by the quality. And actually, us as men, we've been pretty unsuccessful on the rugby field, whereas the women went and won by a record points margin. They were brilliant. So if anything, they put us in our place.
I was going to mention that point as well. But
exactly. But you kind of, it is true, though. Beforehand, they wouldn't have the female team wouldn't have a physiotherapist during the game. So if someone got injured, hopefully there was someone studying medicine, was playing, and someone would look after them, put them in a taxi, take them to A&E. Now they have full medical staff there to support them. They've got full qualified and trained coaches to support them. And that's fantastic and brilliant, but why is it taking so long?
Okay.
For example, today is actually the first time there's a boxing varsity match where women are allowed to compete. So you see it in rugby, you see it in rowing, you see it in all the sports, that the kind of the committees and the people in charge of those sports have had to question and being like, why is it that we've limited the opportunities to the women? And it's no longer an excuse.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, we have 5 minutes left, and I've been told right at the start that we have to stop at 6 o'clock. So over to you. Are there any questions or comments? The lights are quite bright, so if you can wave your hand so I can see. Thank you. And there is a microphone coming down.
So,
yeah, thank you.
Okay. Well, Simon suggested that he might be part of the problem. So my question is to the rest of the panel, do any of you think that you might be part of the problem?
Who wants to take, do you want to take that first?
Absolutely. I've been part of the problem before, because it was very easy to be part of the problem. I'm trying my best not to be as much of a problem now. But the thing is, when the light bulb came on and has come on, and my partnership in my marriage, everything is just so much better for me. Trying to live according to equality. I have conditioning and I have privileges, which means that I won't do 100% job, sometimes a lot less, but now I'm aware of it. And so I am but a flawed human being trying to work towards a situation that makes everybody else's experience, i.e. the other half of the species, a little bit better. That's what I, but am I part of the problem? Well, I think acknowledging that is the important thing, you know, and that none of us are immune. Men or women too, but that's a whole other subject. That this, an inequality can be exacerbated and maintained. In the end, it's toxic for both, and it affects both and seeps into both. But it does need men to step up, you know, and be part of it.
Yeah, completely agree with Stephen. It's very easy to not even see and notice the problem. I spoke to one of the women's players just last week before this, and they made a great point that I've been using aware of. In the clubhouse, where we have the changing rooms, we get changed, you have photos of all the famous players that have played, you have photos of all the teams, every single team that has played. Until this week, there hasn't been a photo of a woman playing rugby in the clubhouse that is both for the men and the women. And I hadn't even noticed that.
No.
So
I wonder, can I jump in with one Call the Midwife reference? Which is that in the BBC, drives my wife mad, she writes the programme. In the BBC, you walk into the foyer, just on this issue, walk into the foyer and all their big ticket shows are all up. Massive posters everywhere. When you first used to walk in the central desk, someone was pointing a gun at you. And there were all these very male images pointing a gun. Call the Midwife is the biggest drama on television. It's the biggest drama the BBC have done for more than a decade. It is invisible in the foyer. It does not exist. There is no poster for it. We have complained for 2 years. There are posters for average shows, documentary shows, this show, that show. Call the Midwife, the biggest show the BBC have, is invisible and it's noticeable. It's become so embarrassing now, it's gone right up the ladder to a problem of us saying to them, will you put a damn poster in your foyer? Because now it's an issue to us. And it's very, very strange. And that's the same thing, invisibility.
I will add just on that, somewhat a different context, but if you go to I think almost any college in Cambridge, that the hall, you will find portraits of men on the walls, and you will hardly ever find portraits anywhere or pictures or acknowledgement of women. Yeah. And there is a very interesting student campaign on that that's just launched to try and change that. I will very briefly answer your question. Yes, I am part of the problem, but also the position I occupy, I can see an opportunity to influence things for the better and feel an obligation to do so. And I think regardless of whether you're man or woman and you have the opportunity to improve things, it is an important opportunity to take. I think we have time for one more question over here.
Yep. More of a comment than a question.
Can you just speak in the microphone for the filming? Brilliant. Okay, thank you.
It's more of a comment than a question. It seems to me a lot of what makes things go wrong is the way that boys are raised. And part of the culture we have in our societies is a culture of male domination. It's not just the male domination of women, but the male domination of younger boys by older boys and boys by men and so on. And it's fairly well known that if someone gets mistreated, they pass on that mistreatment or are vulnerable to passing on that mistreatment. And I think we need to interrupt the culture of males dominating each other, which I think then as males grow to adulthood, we're encouraged to dominate women. And I think part of interrupting that is interrupting the domination of women, but part of it is the way we raise boys and how to be treat boys, not allow the domination, I think, not assume it's natural.
Thank you. And one final question over there. Yep. Thank you.
My question is, as a man fighting for gender equality, how do other men look at you, and what does that change in you for fighting for gender equality?
Could you just repeat the question for me again? I'm sorry.
A man that fights for gender equality, how do other men look at you, and how does that change your behavior, like trying to fight for gender equality?
And it connects with the comment of the man who just spoke before. I think I alluded to this before. Men try to enforce conformity on other men. So sometimes if men are uncomfortable with something that they will actually try to, they will make themselves feel easier about it by trying to enforce their peers to do it. So you'll come under some pressure sometimes. Frankly, it just makes me change my friends. And eventually when those friends have realized that it really has, and there's one in particular is in my mind, and when they realize that it really came between us, then they changed their behavior and thought, no, hang on, I don't want to do this. But it's very, insipid, it's nasty, we're talking about people who aren't evil. These aren't evil people, but there's something rather sad, and it's what you alluded to. We are policing ourselves. We are enforcing, in a sort of a bullying way, enforcing a narrow conformity on ourselves, and it's toxic. It's wrong, and we can be liberated from that.
Either of you, do you want to add anything to that, Simon?
Just to concur with what Steve said, it's anybody who knows me knows I'm a little odd anyway, so that it kind of fits into my life narrative about how I address this. I don't, I take the opposite tack, though. I don't disengage those friends who don't conform. I keep them close on the basis that keep your enemies closer, and you can manage that situation. No, I can't really say that. I have a very, very good and long-standing friend, put it that way, who turned out to be a perpetrator of violent domestic abuse against his wife. We are still friends. And that is something that challenges me every day and every time I think of that. But how do I impact the most? Do I ostracize him and say, no, away you go, I'm not going to challenge, or do I keep him closer to me and try and re-educate him?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I am being waved at, so I'm afraid we are going to have to draw this session to a close. We will, I'm sure, be staying around here for a few minutes. So if you particularly do have other questions you want to raise with any of us, please do. But will you join me in thanking the three speakers? Thank you very much.